This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
227-1212 in Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
August 27th, 1984. Hydroelectric engineer Benjamin Linder and a group of U.S. citizens living in Nicaragua file suit in federal court in Washington, D.C. The charge? The U.S. government, by funding the Contras, is placing the lives of U.S. citizens in danger. April 28, 1987. Contra forces attack a civilian hydroelectric power project in rural northern Nicaragua. Benjamin Linder, a 27-year-old engineer from Portland, Oregon, is killed with two Nicaraguan co-workers. One of Linder's co-workers, Pablo Rosales, is stabbed to death. Another, Sergio Hernandez, is shot through the ear. Ben Linder lies wounded from a grenade the Contras have thrown. Unable to escape, Linder is shot in the head at point-blank range. Target, Benjamin Linder, produced by The Other Americas Radio. I'm Lucy Edwards.
Hello, my name is Lynn Fitch, and I'm here with another Treasures from the Archives. This program tonight is about Ben Linder. Two tapes from the KBOO Archives, titled Remembering Ben, and the other is Target Ben Linder, put together with an interview with Aaron Liss, who's from Green Empowerment. These archive tapes are very, very important historical KBOO tapes, and we are working now submitting grants and collecting donations to make sure that these old reel-to-reel tapes from the 60s, 70s, and 80s are digitized for future use. And here with me today is Aaron Liss, who is the Technical Program Manager for Green Empowerment, who is going to talk about Green Empowerment, its connection to Ben Linder, which is absolutely fascinating, and the work that Green Empowerment does today, which is based on the model that Ben was doing in Nicaragua so long ago.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's really special and a real treat to be able to talk to you and the Portland community about Green Empowerment and our connection to Ben Linder. For those who don't know, Ben Linder was a student, grew up here in Portland. After graduating university in Seattle, traveled down in 1983 to Nicaragua to work on renewable energy, particularly hydroelectric systems, in the front lines in the war against the between the Contra and the Sandinistas. He traveled in 1986 out to the community of El Cuá to dedicate his time and immense energy to bringing light in these areas of darkness. One of the strategies of the Contra coming in from Honduras was to attack health stations and schools and energy production. So he was really working alongside Nicaraguans to train them on renewable energy and make an impact in the communities. And unfortunately, the Contras killed him in 1987, along with two Nicaraguans that he was working with, Sergio Hernandez and Pablo Rosales. That catalyzed the support against the funding of the Contras. The U.S. was funding the Contras at the time. Elizabeth Linder, Ben's mom, and the whole Portland community and the national community, the tide turned away from support. His model of working with the community on sustainable development is the basis and his continuing legacy beyond that work. So at the time of his death, the community around Portland mobilized and sent down brigades to Nicaragua to continue on his work. So continue to build the hydroelectric systems, continue to train people and raise money and support. From that effort, Green Empowerment was born in that model to continue on the work in Nicaragua, as well as take that idea of mixing social justice and renewable energy and community empowerment to bring that to more partnerships around the world.
Tell us about the organization now. So it's carrying on Ben's legacy, but it has grown tremendously. Many years ago, I was a development director at Green Empowerment, and I know that they've expanded really throughout the world with this model of community involvement, social justice, and renewable energy. But it's also moved into areas of potable water and watershed protection and things like that. Talk a little bit about currently what's happening with Green Empowerment and how fortunate Portland is to have this amazing international organization, nonprofit based here.
So Green Empowerment's mission is to provide villages in the developing world access to clean water, electricity through renewable energy, and other sustainable solutions. So as you said, that can take the form of hydroelectric systems, wind systems, solar systems, water pumping for potable water, irrigation, agricultural developments, and other entrepreneurial activities. Green Empowerment works through local non-governmental organizations around the world. And the Association of Rural Development Workers, Ben Linder, the association that rose out of Ben's colleagues in Nicaragua, was Green Empowerment's first partner. And now we've moved to five core countries: Peru, Nicaragua, Philippines, Borneo, and Kenya, as well as having other project partners in other places. And the focus is always on building local capacity and empowering local communities to meet their own needs.
Wow, it is so awesome.
If you want to learn more information about Green Empowerment or get involved, you can visit our website, greenempowerment.org, or send us an email at info@greenempowerment.org.
I'm really grateful that you came by today and talked to us about this, and you really helped to round out this story. So as you hear the interview with Ben's brother and you hear some poetry that was from an event 2 years after Ben Linder was killed, Ben led an amazingly wonderful and courageous life, but he didn't die in vain. And there are projects happening now that are going on in his name that would make him very, very proud. So thank you, and thank you, Green Empowerment.
Thank you for having me.
Sing a song for Benjamin Linder. Sing a song for his family and friends while he was building a dam in the country. Contras, they came, they murdered him. With
guns, guns, guns that our taxes pay for. Guns, guns, guns that the U.S. sends.
I am Jamila, and I'm here with Nat, and we are here in honor of our spring membership drive at this moment. And this is our lovely community radio station, KBOO, going 45 years strong, and you've been here to support us, and you are here to support us again. That is why you are listening. And we are airing our archive programming right now, and this archive programming is in honor of KBOO.fm. That is where you can go to donate right now. It is on the upper right-hand corner, KBOO.fm. This is a wonderful, wonderful experiment, which is moving on to an experience. So let us continue that experience for 45 more years. KBOO.fm. What number can someone call to become a member?
The number is 877-500-5266. Give us a call and please make a donation. Help us meet our fundraising goals. We have a really extensive library here, extensive archives that are really a Portland treasure, a community treasure, and we are only able to maintain those through donations from our listeners, from our friends, from our community, and we need that in order to keep going.
We definitely need that to keep going, and it is with your donation that we will continue to do that. There's about $400 you can help us, $100 a person, by calling 1-877-500-5266. That is one way. We have another way for you at KBOO.FM. Those are a couple of ways you can donate. How much do you earn an hour? What is your wage for an hour? You can donate that. The minimum wage is about, what is it, $8.15?
Something like that.
You can donate $8.15 a month. That is really, really easy. But you have to take that step in order to keep this experience going. 1-877-500-5266. Online at kboo.fm.
Yes. We would like to thank everyone who has already made a donation, and we'd like to thank you in advance if you haven't yet made that call or made that online pledge. But please help us maintain our community resources.
45 years strong. Yes.
This is a tape from the KBOO archive titled Target Ben Linder, and it is an interview that took place with John Linder in the late 1980s.
This program examines Linder's life and commitment to the poor in Nicaragua, the tragic loss for his family and friends, and the work that continues in his name.
Well, they just kind of snuck up on him and just blew him away. Totally premeditated. It wasn't mortars were shot from 2 miles away or something. Nobody knew where they're gonna land.
As far as like physically, he's kind of small and thin, and he was just always telling jokes. When he talked in Spanish, he'd always tell jokes that are in English, like tell them directly, like things that don't translate. And so he'd be laughing and laughing, and none of the Nicaraguans would know what he was laughing at.
It was people who were armed and trained and had a manual on how to murder most effectively provided to them by the CIA and by the US government, by the Connie Max of this world who killed my brother. They want us to shut up.
Target Benjamin Linder. Ben Linder spent 3 years in Nicaragua before his death there in April 1987. His brother, John Linder, explains why Ben went and the work he was involved in.
He made preparations to go in 1982. I guess the first time I remember us talking about Central America and when I first became involved with Central America was in 1980, right around the time when the three nuns and the one U.S. religious lay worker were killed down in El Salvador. And it was really a time of explosion on college campuses around the country. Ben was studying mechanical engineering at the University of Washington. And he became involved somewhere around that time in activities to stop what was looking more and more like another Vietnam in El Salvador. And then in 1982, he went down to Costa Rica, studied Spanish, went to Nicaragua, and lined up a couple possible jobs. He had gone to college with the idea of helping people. His interests in mechanical engineering began with his opposition to nuclear power, and he hoped to develop solar power, wind power, and small hydropower to give people in this country a measure of control over their own lives. And I don't know how his thinking evolved, but I know how mine would have evolved, which is it's pretty hard in the United States with the stranglehold that public utilities and so many other corporations have on development here to really do something that benefits people. And I know in one of the first letters that he sent from Nicaragua is that it's very nice to be in a country where you're not constantly fighting the system, where the first priority of the society is the needs of its poor. In other words, what he wanted to do in the United States, he was able to do there as a result of the revolution that had changed the whole power structure and put people who had nothing in power.
John Linder. Ben worked and lived in El Qua, in the province of Hinotega. El Qua played an important role in the struggle against the Somoza dictatorship.
In 1984, he was sent for the first time up to El Qua, which is a small town of about 3,000 people in Hinotega province in northern Nicaragua. And he described it as something like going into a Wild West town in the 1800s. Dirt roads, ox-drawn carts, nobody had light in their homes, nobody had running water. It's an area that had a big role in the fight against Somoza. In fact, there's a poem, Las Mujeres del Qua, that describes how the women of El Qua watched as their husbands were thrown out of helicopters by Somoza's National Guard and yet refused to divulge information on the whereabouts of Sandinistas in the area. I'm told that 3,000 people were killed in this area by Somoza's National Guard. And today, again, they're being terrorized by Somoza's National Guard, only now they're called Contras. And the many farm families in the area, it is a rural area, have been forced to leave their farms due to Contra attacks and move closer to the towns where they can be better protected. Ben went up there. A hydro plant had been started and stopped and started and stopped. There was a shiny wire running right through town and a nice dam that had been built. But nobody, no engineer to follow through on the hydro plant. So he did that. And for the first time, people had light. And he used to like to walk down the streets and listen to the radios playing and say, hey, I had something to do with that. It meant a lot, this plant. It meant that classes could be taught at night in the school. It meant that the medical clinic had a sure source of electricity so that they could keep vaccines and medicines. And ultimately, the idea was to use the natural resources of the area to provide, like wood and coffee, and process them right there with the power generated by the hydroelectric plants. This was to be the first of about 14. And it really turned around the whole traditional colonial relationship where everything that's produced in local areas is shipped somewhere else, processed somewhere else, and is then too expensive for the people from the area where it came to ever buy it. Lumber, for instance, now is taken so far away before it's milled that the campesinos can't purchase it. But the hydro plant and others like it can allow lumber mills, mini mills, to be set up right there. So the idea is to give people control over their own development, and attached to the plant or along with it, they set up a mechanic shop and a training school, and all the electrical hookups between the plant and the homes were made by electricians, townspeople trained right there. Right now, with the project, farmers are being trained to repair tractors and coffee processing equipment, and we hope through the memorial fund that we've set up to also put in a full-scale machine shop with a lathe and a milling machine and the equipment needed to make parts for agricultural equipment as well as to build turbines for future hydro plants.
Put your life on the line where your heart is. There is no pain in coming home. When you live out the life you have chosen, your spirit lives when you are not. Put your life on the line where your heart is. There is no pain in coming home. When you live out the life you have chosen, your spirit lives when you are gone.
We are here. I am Jamila, and Nat is with me.
Hello.
Like Nat Turner. And we are here in the name of justice. And representing people's different experiences, because that is what KBOO does. I'm sure when you listen to KBOO, there are different interests you have. And we are a 24-hour station for you, and that is with your contributions in order to keep us running at 24 hours. And right now we are showing you what we've done over the years. We are playing archives from KBOO. And the number you can call to help contribute to this wonderful little station that's been going for 45 years is 1-877-500-5266. There are just so many gifts in return for you when you give us that gift of your time and your energy to become a member, an owner of this station. Help us sustain this station. It is up to you.
I agree with Jamila. Our part of enjoying this station is being a listener, but taking it to another level is becoming a participant, because the truth is, at all times, even if we're just passively listening, we're still participating in just the least active way possible. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it could be righter. It could be better. And the way to make it better is to become a member and make that minimum donation of $60 and take the time and have really get a stake in KBOO and make yourself a part of the experience. Make KBOO a part of yourself, and everyone wins.
And that stake could be done to contribute to someone who's on lockdown right now, someone who is in prison, because there are plenty of people who communicate with us, who listen to KBOO, but are not able to call in for whatever reason, because they have that one phone call to talk to their families and loved ones. Do something for them. Do something for people who are low income. Donate your time and your energy and call those numbers, 1-877-500-5266. You are perhaps listening to this program online at kboo.fm. Click on another homepage, kboo.fm, and go on the upper right-hand corner and donate right now. It is up to you. We've been here for 45 years, and you can keep this humble little station going for 45 more. And we have about a $400 goal. You can help us make that. I'd say about, $100. Per person, that would make an easy
$400.
And we do want to thank some restaurants who have donated their time and energy in this drive. Toast at 5222 Southeast 52nd Avenue, Daily Grill at 750 Southwest Elder Street, and Blue Olive at 500 Northwest 21st Avenue. We have several gifts for you. When you become a member of this station, we have a poster of the day. So when you are on KBOO.fm, we have a daily poster you can see. So this is every day of this drive. You have a chance to win a print of an historic KBOO poster, and you can frame it. You can do whatever you want with it, but that is a gift for you when you become a member. You just submit your entry before 3 p.m. each day for a chance to win a brand new print of the day's poster. So if you like that poster you see on KBOO.fm when you're becoming a member, just click on before 3 p.m. and say, I want that poster, and you get a chance. We have, for a $90 minimum donation, that shirt. And it's only available for the 2013 Spring Drive. Yes, that shirt. It is a pretty provocative, tongue-in-cheek shirt. So if you like provocative and tongue-in-cheek kind of things, that's the shirt for you. It is with a $90 minimum donation, and that will help contribute to our $400 this hour. So how can you do that? 1-877-500-5266. What's another way, Nat?
Or if you are more technologically inclined, you can go on your internet machine and dial up kboo.fm is our website, and if you go into the upper right hand corner, click on the tip jar, and there will be directions from there on how to make a contribution.
And it's all up to you to help contribute to this humble little station. We're always here. We are at 20 Southeast 8th. You can come in person and donate that way. And you can meet all of us who are involved in creating this humble little station. We've been here for 45 years. Let us do
this
it for 45 more years. 1-877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Donate today.
Linder knew the risks of working in the conflict zones. where civilian development projects are routinely attacked. He took precautions, yet felt the risk was necessary to take, in light of the suffering endured by the civilian population at the hands of the Contras.
We both agreed that to be an engineer, you have to be a live engineer. There was no question in his mind that to do his work, he needed to be careful, and he was very careful. He didn't travel at night if it was in any way avoidable. He traveled in caravans. Right now, many of the roads in the area have been mined, and so they try as much as possible to travel in caravans where several soldiers can walk in front to see if the road has been dug up and a mine planted. At the same time, he said that risk is something you either accept or you reject, and he had chosen to accept it. He was surrounded by Nicaraguans who had suffered much greater sacrifices than him. The old man who he lived with, Don Cosme, had lost two sons just in the last year to the Contras. And yet these people kept on. Really, they have no choice but keep on. It's their country. They don't have anywhere else to go. And once he had become committed to the development process and the development project and to these people, he knew that for him to leave, to say, no, I'm only going to stay in the safety of Managua, would be to give the Contras exactly what they wanted, and to leave these people who had taken him in and who he identified with, to leave them with nothing. So he decided to stay.
Ben's mother, Elizabeth Linder, was a Jewish refugee from Czechoslovakia during the Second World War. Her experiences gave the family an acute understanding of injustice and its roots, and the sense of being citizens of the world.
My mother had to leave Czechoslovakia when she was 8 or 9 years old as Hitler's troops surrounded Prague. And then she, like many Jews, was denied entry into the United States, although her family tried to get in. So they went to Mexico. She lived on a farm there and finished high school there, lived there until she was 18. I think that experience had an effect on me, and it probably did on Ben as well. It makes you think that you're a citizen of the world. Here she had gone from Czechoslovakia, then to Switzerland, then to England, then to Mexico, and eventually to the United States. You can't hear those stories, which she didn't really like to talk about, but we got them out of her, without realizing that the world is not only the United States, that the people of other countries are not much different than us. And also to realize what racism does, because after all, my mother was a refugee from racism, and racism is the bottom line that is needed to justify things like the Contra War, is an idea that somehow people in another country who speak another language can be wiped out, 15,000 of them or 300,000 of them, like was done in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that this is somehow okay. And I think once you get beyond that racism, then politics changes.
John Linder, brother of Benjamin Linder, the U.S. hydroelectric engineer killed in Nicaragua by Contra forces on April 28, 1987.
We're listening to Treasures from the KBOO Archive, and this is KBOO Portland.
My sister found out first. Some friends of hers and of my parents heard, and they called her and they asked her if she could stay at home for a while, that they had something to tell her. And they came over and they told her, and she called me, and I wasn't home. She got a hold of my girlfriend, who came and told me. And it's a pretty shocking thing to realize that all of a sudden somebody's just gone. A minute before they were all here, and now they're all gone. And so I went home and started trying to call Nicaragua to find out what really had happened. I called my sister first, and she didn't know any of the details, and we didn't know what the plans were for a funeral. And finally I reached a very close friend of my brother's in Nicaragua, and I learned what happened.
Linder's parents were on vacation when word came that Ben had been killed.
The same friends who came and told my sister of what happened managed to contact them through the police in a tiny town in Northern California or Southern Oregon, and they drove all night. My mother says she doesn't think they said a word all night. They drove home, And that's when they and my sister decided that we should go down to Nicaragua. Ben had told his friends that if he was killed, he wanted to be buried in Nicaragua. I flew home the next morning, and myself, my parents, my sister, my girlfriend, and an old girlfriend of Ben's all flew down to Nicaragua on the night of the 29th, flying all night and arriving in Managua the next day, and then driving up to Matagalpa for the funeral. He was working to build a second hydroelectric plant, and he was about a mile outside of the town of San Jose de Bocay. They were building what's called a weir. It's a small dam used to measure the flow of water, and they had to build it right then because it was the end of the dry season, and they needed to see the minimum flow of water in the stream. He and six Nicaraguans were working, and this was the sixth day of their work. They got there about 8 in the morning. This was on Tuesday, April 28th. And shortly after, the Contras opened fire. Ben, at the time, was squatting near the stream taking notes. There were four survivors to the attack, and all of them said the same thing. Ben was squatting there wearing civilian clothes. As the Nicaraguans moved other materials around, the Contras attacked with machine guns and grenades, and Ben was wounded in the legs and in his arm, immobilizing him, and was then shot at point-blank range. We didn't know that when we went down to Nicaragua. We had heard that he was killed instantly by a grenade wound, but we wanted to know for ourselves what had happened. And so we asked and arranged to meet the doctor who had carried out the autopsy. And we read the autopsy report, and he explained to us that Ben was killed by a bullet to his forehead, temple, and that the wound was surrounded by powder burns, which show that he must have been shot from less than 2 feet away. This was then confirmed by two U.S. nurses and one U.S. doctor who examined Ben's body, not to carry out an autopsy, but who dressed it and preparing it for burial. And it was also then confirmed by close-up photos of the wound, which were examined by a number of forensic experts in the United States, one of whom, Dr. Michael Baden, said in his opinion Ben was shot from no more than 1 inch away.
John Linder. Maryknoll priest Father John Spain was interviewed at Linder's wake in Matagalpa by the Other Americas Radio.
Well, they just kind of snuck up on him and just blew him away. Totally premeditated. It wasn't wasn't just like mortars were shot from 2 miles away or something. Nobody knew where they're going to land. I mean, this was a direct attack. Again, were they just trying to destroy the project, or just trying to stop progress for the people, or they were trying to kill Ben? I mean, I suppose it all adds up to the same thing. Because Ben was progress, and Ben was helping the people. He's, again, the fact that he's been killed by American bombs, and he was just attacked while he was working in the pouring cement and trying to build a box, which was going to be the testing area to see how much water was flowing through the area, and the water was supposed to be used for hydroelectric power for the people, as well as potable water projects. He was there with the local farming people there from the area. We're collaborating with him, and he was collaborating with them, really. It's their project. So, I mean, I think he certainly died on, with his boots on, doing what he does best and doing what he came here to do and take a risk in order to be able to do.
Kathy Thomas, a religious volunteer with the ecumenical group Witness for Peace, worked in the same region as Linder.
Last March, for the first time in their lives, the community of Elqua got light. And it was just a miracle. And it was 90% due to his efforts and the efforts of Donald, who was another North American working here at the time with him. That was before Mira came. Mira's another North American that's working with him now, or was working with him. But due to their efforts, the town got light. So I think, seeing the direct benefit of his work, as opposed to working kind of anonymously in the United States, but being able to see direct effects and being able to help people directly, and seeing a lot of that going on, not just with his work, but with the work of other people around him, I think made him excited to be in Nicaragua.
Witness for Peace volunteer, Kathy Thomas.
Two Nicaraguans were killed also. Pablo Rosales was wounded and then killed by a stab wound to his chest. And Sergio Fernandez was shot through the head, though I don't know from what distance. Initially, the Contra said that Ben's death was accidental, that he had been killed in a crossfire between themselves and Sandinista troops. But that lie simply fell apart. It's just one of so many lies which, when you're close to the situation, you can really see who's telling the truth and who's telling the lies. But they now have stated publicly that they knew that Ben and his co-workers were building a hydroelectric project. And knowing this, they set up an ambush and they killed them. They said this to the Times. They said this to the U.S. State Department. And what is so striking, or really horrid, is that even though they've made this admission, no official of the U.S. government or of the Reagan administration has condemned Ben's killing. You know, I remember back last year when a USGI was killed in a West Berlin discotheque, and this was called terrorism, and the United States bombed Libya. They killed more than 100 people, including a number of children, and then they said, well, maybe Syria did it. In my brother's case, they haven't called it even murder. They haven't even said that this is a wrongful death, and I believe the reason for that is because this typifies their policy. If this were an exception or an accident, something that shouldn't have happened, it would be very easy right now for somebody from the State Department to say the Contras should not kill U.S. citizens carrying out civilian development projects. But they have not said that.
John Linder.
This is Ben Linder's sister, Miriam, speaking at the conference in the spirit of Ben Linder in September of 1987.
My first trip to Nicaragua was the day after Ben was killed. And we were there for a week at the time of his funeral. Ben's life ended then on April 28th, and in many ways my life ended and I began a new life. So we were in Nicaragua for one very difficult week and then came back here to Portland. I knew as soon as I was back here that I had to go back to Nicaragua as soon as I could. So many things had begun then. I had met Ben's friends. I had begun to understand his work and the importance of it. So the first that I could go back was in July. In some ways I picked the date because Ben had picked the date. When I spoke with him in April, a couple weeks before he was killed, I asked him when he was coming home next to visit. And he said, in August. And I said, why August? He said, well, it's the soonest I can come. I really want to go to the July 19th celebration with Don Cosme, who's the old man he lived with in El Cua. July 19th is the anniversary of the triumph of the Nicaraguan Revolution. This year, July 19th, was the 8th anniversary of the triumph of the Nicaraguan Revolution. So I let Ben's time frame be mine and went for that celebration on July 19th. What I was thinking before I went was that I was going to be closer to Ben. That's why I was going. And that happened in many, many ways. Ben is buried in the city of Matagalpa, the capital of Region 6 in which he worked, where many of his friends live and work. He's buried in a beautiful cemetery up on the hill overlooking the valley of Matagalpa. At the time when we buried him, as Mom said in speaking about the work he was doing when he was killed, it was the end of the dry season in the end of April, and the rains began the day after his funeral, the 1st of May. It's very green there right now. So he was buried, but his grave had no marker. It had a numbered marker that they put on to keep track and a mound, and when you went into the cemetery, you just start walking up the hill, and pretty soon all the kids from the neighborhood just across the ravine, they'd see you and come running over and ask what grave you're looking for, and they could tell you any one of them, and they could certainly tell you Ben's grave. And so I decided we needed to fix his grave and put a marker on it. The day that we placed the stone on Ben's grave, and the kids all ran to get flowers to plant, and Jeff Hart from Salem, Oregon, is there juggling. It says Benjamin Ernest Linder, internationalist. It says that he was born, where and when he was born, and where and when he fell. La luz que encendió brillará para siempre. The light he lit will shine forever. And there's the unicycle with the dove that originated here in Portland, Oregon, thanks to Krista Higgins, my friend.
And this is what we're here for, to honor people whose work was about community. And we are a community radio station going for 45 years. And we are here to do the work of the community in positive ways. And you can help sustain that. You can help us keep this going by calling 1-877-500-5266.
Absolutely. We have a new t-shirt which proclaims that self-righteous gutter punks and militant vegans, KBOO is not just for you anymore. But we should also remember it is for you if you are a self-righteous gutter punk or a militant vegan or even just a regular person. It is for you. And to love it is to be part of it, to quote Ed Wood. So be part of KBOO and help us continue our mission of bringing a different point of view, different points of view to you, the listener, to the viewer, because your other options are sanitized corporate radio, and I think we can do better than that, personally.
And we definitely can do better than that. And we have about $400 to make this hour, and you can help us make that. And there was something that came to mind while listening to this archive programming. And he was speaking of the world not just being comprised of the U.S. It comprises of every single person that exists on this earth. And people around the earth, in the earth, on the earth, around the world, share the same values of justice. There are people you may not even have met who share the same values as you to maintain justice in this world, to maintain peace in this world. So if that desire of justice is the same for you, 877-500-5266. If you can do $100 this hour, and I know you can, you're listening saying, okay, I can do it. $50.
$50 would be
1 hour's wage. You can do that. If you can do $60 for this whole year, you are able to do that. And if you don't have access to a phone, you have access to just either a laptop or a desktop computer, KBOO.FM. You can listen to some of this archiving, the news. If you missed the news, you can listen to that. If you were looking for interviews, some sort of audio, you can find that. 1-877-500-5266 or KBOO.FM. Become a member.
This is a tape from the KBOO archive titled Target Ben Linder. And it is an interview that took place with John Linder in the late 1980s.
The Contras themselves have stated, both over radio and in newspaper dispatches, that they intend to keep killing foreign volunteers. There was one that warned Nicaraguan citizens, don't walk down the street next to foreign volunteers. It could be dangerous to you. Yet, in the House subcommittee hearing that was investigating my brother's death, Elliot Abrams refused to rule out that Ben was a legitimate target. His chief argument was that Ben should have known better, that he went into a combat zone. But Elliot Abrams' goal is to turn all of Nicaragua into one big combat zone. You know, he stood there with a map and he had the combat zones shaded and he pointed to the Quabocay zone and said, see, there have been 80 attacks here in the last month. But on a different day and before a different subcommittee, he could have had the same map and been pointing proudly, saying, look, we've succeeded. We've had 80 attacks in the Quabocay zone. We've opened up a new front along the Costa Rican border, because his goal is to turn all of Nicaragua into a combat zone. And then one has to ask where the Nicaraguans supposed to go, even if the volunteers from other countries were to leave. Another justification that's been raised by some is that they say that Ben was armed. We have to ask, who is it that makes people carry arms in Nicaragua? I was there in 1984, and I spent a few hours in a child care center on a farm in Hinotega province. And 6 months after I left, the child care center was attacked. Four of the eight women who ran it were killed. A 16-month-old, a 4-year-old were killed in their cribs by the Contras. And yet the Contras then turn around and say that if you carry a gun to protect yourself, you become a legitimate target. And this has been echoed by many of the spokesmen for the Reagan administration. And I wonder what people here would think if they all of a sudden could have their doors kicked down, or if they could be run off the road because they've got a gun on their pickup rack. Yet, the government of the United States assumes the right to deny the right to self-defense to people in Nicaragua. On May 13th, my parents testified, and they presented the basic information on how Ben was killed. I was there, though I didn't testify. There are some real virulent Contra supporters on that committee. One of them, Connie Mack, a representative from Florida, attacked my parents. He said, "I don't understand how you can politicize the death of your son, how you can use your grieving to politicize this issue." And there was a tremendous amount of outrage in the country as a result, because people know that it was Connie Mack's politics that killed Ben. It was people who are armed and funded and trained and have intelligence provided to them and had a manual on how to murder most effectively provided to them by the CIA and by the U.S. government, by the Connie Macks of this world, who killed my brother. We're not politicizing the issue. It was his politics that killed him. All we're doing is spelling out the truth. They want us to shut up. It's easier when their victims are a few thousand miles away and speak another language and are Nicaraguan. There's been somewhere between 15 and 20,000 Nicaraguans who've been killed by this war, and yet they remain nameless and faceless and pretty much unmentioned by the media in this country. And we don't see their families. We don't see them grieving. We don't know about their dreams. We don't know about their childhood. It's a statistic, and even that statistic is rarely mentioned. So Connie Mack thought he might be able to shut us up. He's for the Contra war. He accepts what he calls the price. He accepts the 15 or 20,000 who've been murdered as a result of the Contra war. He accepts the murder of my brother. And I think Anthony Lewis, the columnist, pointed out very well just how perverse the morals of people can become when they set out on a war path directed against people and against the very most basic sensibilities that we all should have. Anthony Lewis also made another point. He said, you know, Connie Mack accused the Linder parents of politicizing the issue, but what would he have thought if my brother had been killed by a drunk driver and my mother had come as a representative of Mothers Against Drunk Driving to testify before Congress? Then Connie Mack probably would have said, "I'm so proud of you. I don't understand. I'm impressed that in your moment of grieving, you've taken the time out to save the lives of others." Well, that's what we're doing. We know what it's like to suffer, and we know we're not the only ones, and we think that the only real way to remember my brother and the thousands of Nicaraguans who have died as a result of the Contra war is to stop the policies that killed them, and we're doing all we can to do that.
John Linder, brother of Benjamin Linder, the U.S. hydroelectric engineer killed in Nicaragua by Contra forces on April 28, 1987. Target Benjamin Linder, produced by The Other Americas Radio. Special thanks to Alan Julien of Portland, Oregon, and to Witness for Peace.
Next is a poem by Greg Kleiner called Turning Water into Light. It is read by John Adiego.
This poem is called Turning Water into Light. You went down deep into Nicaragua, a bruised bulge on the umbilical cord that connects twin continents, centuries, if ever, from equality. You brought nothing but your hands, your head, your fever-hot desire to help her people grow, like the corn and blood-colored coffee beans that push up thirsty and scared from her red soil. In the night's tar heat, you held her soft-boned babies who knew nothing of embargoes, but everything about hunger. You looked up at the same moon we see from here, the moon our country claimed with a stiff flag and footprints, then realized moon rocks weren't worth much, stardust only worked in fairy tales, and returned to milking our neighbors as ants, aphids. You tried to turn water into light, the light we notice only when a bulb flares white, then fades to black. To replace the orange tongues dancing in glassless windows, jack-o'-lantern eyes in the night. But the contra like the dark. The soil your fingernails held in brick-colored crescents now holds you and thousands, but above your adopted people wade on, waist-deep against the current of nothing, trickling down the cord from the north. Their light, blown out by bullets we all owned, still burns. Thank you.
Indeed, we are here honoring the spring membership drive. I am Jamila, here with Nat.
Hello.
And we are just, again, in honor of this station, which has been going for 45 years. We wanted to go for 45 more because this is an important resource. We are dwindling in terms of resources, which talk about alternative news, which talk about news which is vital to creating and sustaining communities. And there are people who do consider this an important resource, and we would like to thank them right now. Sharon and Rebecca, both of Portland, who have renewed. So thank you so much. And we want to thank you in advance for calling 1-877-500-5266. And if you are listening online at KBOO.FM, we want to thank you for donating and sustaining this station. We are playing archive shows right now because you've asked for them, as people who sustain the station, as people who just listen and want to hear certain things. We are here for you as a resource. So let us know what you're thinking. Let us know how you feel. Give us a call, 1-877-500-5266.
And the KBOO archives, it's KBOO itself is really a very unique resource. Not everywhere in the country has an outlet for, I don't know what the word would be, but, you know, sort of independent journalism and out there musical points of view. There's a lot of the structure of radio, it seems, of entertainment, it seems to be being forced through this
and that's pretty
hierarchy.
Much what they're giving you is entertainment. They're not giving you points of view which question society at large. They're not giving you points of view which question authority, so to speak, because authority, they tend to create laws which are not inherent to our freedom. So if you agree with that, if you agree with what you've been hearing on KBOO these past 45 years, the number...
Yeah, keep it going for another 45. 877-500-5266.
KBOO.FM. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see that you are contributing to sustaining this experience in independent radio and community. Thank you, Kurt.
You are listening to a recording from April 24th, 1989, 2 years after Ben Linder was killed, and it's entitled Remembering Ben.
Trying to understand, Margot Fagry.
Trying to understand. We gathered like fireflies at dusk, arriving in twos or threes, settling onto the hard brick plaza, sinking into the soft outlying grass. We were circles and circles of people, hollow inside. Disbelief, we would not see you again. At 7 o'clock, I woke to the jarring voice of the radio announcer. Ben Linder of Portland, a 27-year-old engineer, was killed today in Jinotega, Nicaragua. Yes, we knew always it was a possibility, but you had survived logging trucks peeling round coastal curves on your unicycle from BC to San Francisco, a trip none of us would have tried. You had arrived in Nicaragua and donned your clown's nose, joined the circus while waiting for your work visa. Things fell into place for you. Somewhere near the war front, Elizabeth said, when I called a year previously, asking how you were. Fear coated each word, but I trusted your invincibility, your rightness of action. Was it January when I watched you from the back of a crowded room, your arms moving through air like a starfish beckoning? You talked of turbines and flywheels, showed slides of small electric plants built on rivers, and people you'd worked with, their faces alight. I felt distant, uncertain of direction, while you, 10 years younger, had blossomed into adulthood. I left without saying hello. I would not see you again. Did you know they would carry your name like a flag, Ben, create festivals and conferences, write poems, plays, even a book about your life? No, I said, no anecdotes come to mind. Just that he was young, sure of himself at 17, waiting on the train tracks at Trojan, speaking even then with his body. Did you know we would grieve for you as we had not for those in the land? Did you know you would grow bigger then? Our fingers reach out, tracing the lines of your face, your words, feeling the imprint of your hands.
Thank you so much for listening tonight. It's been a pleasure bringing this program to you. If you are interested in supporting the KABU Archiving Project, please contact Lynn Fitch, Station Navigator, via email, navigator@kboo.org.
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, also heard around the world at www.kboo.fm. Up next is Hard Knock Radio during our pledge membership drive, so stay tuned.
Tune in Saturday, April 6th for a grand finale to the Spring Membership Drive featuring live music, great programming, and charming hosts, all from the KABU studios. From 2 to 5 p.m., The Motif will feature live music from Nick Geffro and Palante, Bach and Friends, and Charles Robinson. KABU will reschedule the Hollywood Bowl event, but the same great performances will happen at the KABU studio Saturday, April 6th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., a terrific grand finale to the Spring Membership Drive. Saturday, April 6th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tune in, enjoy, become a member. Thanks for listening. Thursday night at 8 p.m. for Guess Who's Coming to Radio, when Jamila will be honoring ancestor Curtis Mayfield. She will explore his words and music through time, from his experience with the Impressions to his solo works, as well as songs he's penned for several artists, including Aretha Franklin and Mavis Staples. Again, that's Thursday at 8 p.m. for a Curtis Mayfield artist special on Guess Who's Coming to Radio.
Keep on watching.
One, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
It's history. It's history. Never been done before. Never been done
in this
before.
Country. In this country.
Come on.
subject. We're talking about a subject.
What's happening, folks? This is Greg Bridges, and today on Hard Knock Radio, Davey D speaks with noted author and activist Alice Walker about the lasting legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the anniversary of his timeless speech, I've Been to the Mountaintop. Miss Walker also speaks about her latest works and much more.
What's up, everybody? This is Kamiko Joy.
Yeah, and this is Rico Pabong.
You're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
This is Mitty Baraka. Whenever I'm in the area, I try to listen to Hard Knock Radio to raise the level of my consciousness. Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop.
That's right. We are tuning in to Hard Knock Radio right now on this wonderful Wednesday evening of KBOO Membership Fund Drive. And we are raising money to keep our wonderful KBOO Community Radio going for another 45 years. And you can call 1-877-500-5266 right now to pledge your support for Hard Knock Radio. Hard Knock Radio is not free. We do pay to have this wonderful syndicated program on Portland Airwaves here at a wonderful community radio station that is KBOO. So if you enjoy Hard Knock Radio, as I'm sure that you do, because you always tune in every night at 7 p.m. in the wonderful city of PDX, you will pledge your support. And you can call 877-500-